What's up, founders, and welcome to the In Demand podcast, where we talk all about how to troubleshoot growth for your PLG SaaS. I'm your co-host, Asia Arangio, the CEO and founder of Demand Maven.
And I'm Kim Talarczyk, client services manager at Demand Maven, where we help SaaS companies reach their toughest growth milestones.
All right, Kim, let's get into it.
Hi, Asia.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. What's our topic for today?
So I'm excited to dive into a topic we've dealt with a lot. We're currently working on this now. So hiring marketers specifically. And we have found in our experience that hiring for marketing can be very hard. It's a difficult thing to do. And I think there's a difference when you're working with technical founders versus maybe, you know, marketers or sales first owners or executive leaders. So I want to unpack that a little bit with you. Why is marketing, hiring for marketing so hard?
I know. Oh my gosh. Okay. So this is such a good topic because I know so many founders who have struggled with this, are currently struggling with this. And then there are some who have overcome this challenge and they have been able to very confidently and securely hire very quality marketing talent. And my hope is that by the end of this, we identify like what is that key difference. But we'll start with why is it hard to hire for marketing, period, especially if you are non-technical. And what I find is, I mean, it's similar to virtually anything that you do in life. If you don't have as much experience with something, you might not understand what to look for. And also, you may not understand or be able to conceive of what is good versus great versus maybe not so good. And of course, we don't want to reduce people down to, you know, just their skills and like, you know, their ability to perform and capacity. Like we're talking about human beings in this scenario. So of course, I want to be sensitive to that fact. But when it comes to hiring for a particular role and then expecting a certain level of performance from that role, and making sure we're setting the right expectations for ourselves, this is really challenging. And if you are the technical founder and also the CEO, this is even more challenging because the CEO's job is literally to, well, one, make sure you don't die, and then two, hire. Like, you've got to hire. And you're going to have to hire for every function, especially if you're growing. And it's going to start with technical, which will be relatively more straightforward, but it will still be challenging. And then the more that you expand into areas and territories that are less familiar, you're going to experience more fear, more strife, more uncertainty and doubt because you're less familiar with it. So hiring for engineering and product, probably very familiar. Hiring for UX design, relatively familiar. Maybe you've got experience with that. And obviously, this is going to be dependent based on like what you've just experienced in your professional life. There are some founders who graduate college and they literally like build a product or two and that's it. That's all they've really got. So they have no real way to compare one versus another. And because they've never led a team, they've never had to hire, or they've never worked in an environment where they saw the hiring process for what it was and how you sourced great talent. And then there's the flip side of this. Many founders come from backgrounds where they've worked in organizations that might have been very large or could have also been small. I mean, it runs the gamut, like what type of experience you might have had. And if you've been lucky enough to see what great marketing functions look like, then you probably have a sense for like what to look for, but only if you actually interface with those people. So maybe you worked for an incredibly successful company back in the day, but you didn't interface at all with marketing, or you didn't interface at all with sales, and you have no idea what that like really looks like. So one day you get inspired to create a product, and maybe you're a technical founder. And when you think about hiring in the future, after you grow a little bit, you know, you can actually afford to like hire some people. You're really basing everything off of your past experience, which is what you should do. It's what you kind of have to do. But if you don't have any of that experience, then what do you compare? Like, what do you have to compare? And so this is what ends up happening is if you don't have a whole lot to compare to, like you don't really know what a great marketer looks like. What ends up happening is you compare it to all of the very pro-marketing, like visible influencer-y types. So I'm going to give you a gamut because the gamut is wide. Like it's everything from like Alex Hormozy and Gary Vaynerchuk to like Aleda Salas and Amanda Natividad and Rand Fishkin. Like that's and really like the scope is actually even wider. Like, but those are all marketers, if you think about it. And then you've got Seth Godin somewhere in there, who's like marketing god, basically. He's like the grandfather of marketing, even though marketing has existed well before he was born. And then like Henry Ford is somewhere in there. You know what I mean? So like, and maybe actually, you know, Seth is on one, is like another spec, like his own spectrum in his own way. But when you think about hiring for marketing and you've never worked with a marketer or like seen a marketing department, all you can really compare it to is just what you see out there in the wild.
Right. Which is very different from someone in your business actively working on marketing.
Right. Right. Very different. And also what I find is great marketers are certainly people who ensure that you've heard of them. That's absolutely true. Like when you think about the greatest consultants in the SaaS and PLG space, and also just software in general, like when you think about the greatest marketers and leaders and thinkers, even if they're not like marketing in their day job, they're doing good marketing because you know about them. Right?
Right.
But this is fundamentally different still than someone who is doing marketing on behalf of your organization, acquiring customers. And this is like a, I don't know, it's not like that controversial of a take, but sometimes I find that some of the greatest marketers in the world are actually not the ones that are the most visible. They're actually the ones doing all the hard, grindy work behind the scenes in a company.
Yeah, they're doing the work. They're not doing the work to promote themselves or make themselves visible.
Right. But
and that's the difference between hiring a consultant, more of a consultant, versus your in-house marketing role.
Right. But I guess like coming from marketing and having been a marketer in my career, the dirty secret, though, is like the marketer that gets promoted is probably the one that's more visible and also is the one who's generating results. So like for the business. So there certainly is an overlap between the two. They're not mutually exclusive. Like you can be a very visible marketer and also generate incredible results for the business. Amanda Natividad is a great example of this. Very visible marketer generating incredible results for SparkToro. But all that to say, this is still like again, if you have nothing else to compare it to, like you're gonna want to compare it to that. But I think what is tricky about marketing especially is that what you see is what it's the outcome or the manifestation of having marketing, but you may never see the behind the scenes. Like you may never know like how much work something took or how much of an investment or how much planning or how much time, et cetera, et cetera. So I think about Grow and Convert, an agency that focuses on content marketing. I think about Animals, another agency that focuses on content marketing. And these are two agencies that over the years have done incredible jobs of marketing themselves. And I think what's really cool is they've made a lot of the processes that they've leveraged to grow very transparent to an extent. Obviously, they don't want to give everything away. You know, there's got to be some secret to the sauce. But I think that they are like very real, visible pieces of proof of how much effort and energy marketing takes. And yet you may still look at their end results and just kind of see like all of this overnight success took 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, so I'll have to say it's really tough to parse like how much hard work actually went into what you see on the surface. And this is also why I think it's so hard to hire for marketing, because if you don't understand how long actually it takes to do a good marketing or even a great marketing and how much energy and effort it requires, you would literally never invest in it because you'd be like, no way, this is too much. But we all know like the great marketers understand like, no, this shit takes a lot of energy and effort and time. And sometimes happy accidents that can only happen by iterating off of this work and like doing this hard work. But yeah, that's kind of like my perspective of like of part of the sea of why it is just so difficult to kind of see what you're seeing and understanding and knowing like, yeah, this takes a lot of energy and effort, but also like who are all the people that are behind all of this?
Right. So what advice then do you give to technical founders that need to make that first hire or the first few hires
So
in
like,
marketing?
So what do you do? Yeah. Well, man, we have a couple of episodes, and they definitely need to be updated because there are better places now, I think, to find marketing talent. But I think in general, you have to be cognizant and aware of what ultimately is your budget. Like, what do you actually realistically have to spend on marketing that is loaded? Loaded meaning it includes salaries or contractor freelancer rates or agency rates. Like, this is the total amount that you're spending on marketing, a fully loaded budget. Unloaded means we're taking out salaries and how much we're paying people, cost of goods sold, or however you want to classify it. But what is like the actual real total loaded budget? And then from there, the first question is, can you actually afford to hire someone? Or is it really more of a, you know, you've got to slice and dice it using contractors and freelancers. And then from there, it may actually very well be like, you don't have that much to spend. That's okay. It might have to be like a, you maybe invest in your own education and you learn a little bit to make some shifts in movement and momentum. And in a lot of cases, the founders just have to learn how to do a marketing. So like Groove HQ is one of the greatest examples, I think, in the SaaS bootstrap space. If I'm not mistaken, I think this was Alex Turnbull, I think was his name. Alex taught himself content marketing. And also he was one of the very first companies to build in public. And I think Arvid Kahl is another great example of someone technical who taught themselves how to do marketing. Even though Arvid would probably say he's not a marketer. He absolutely is. He's 100% a marketer. He just doesn't identify as that yet, maybe. But Arvid Kahl of the Bootstrap founder, if you're familiar with his work. But these folks had to learn marketing. And also, they probably pay a little bit of money to get support. I know for in Alex's case, eventually he invested in like a content marketing team, if I'm not mistaken. But in Arvid's case, I believe he has a few. I know he relies very heavily on Claude AI to support his work. And also, I think he uses like freelancers and contractors. So first step is like, do I actually have the budget to hire someone? And if so, how much do I have?
Right. Make sure that you're ready. You know, there's probably different reasons why founder or founders would not have the time or need to focus in other areas or depending on the business.
Right. Right.
So now if you decide, okay, I can hire someone, you know, I know my approximate budget for a salary. What's next?
Yeah. I think the next is really to do one of two things. And this is going to depend on your ability to be strategic. If you are able to be strategic about marketing, then for example, like if it were me in the seat, I'd probably say, well, what type of marketer do I need? Do I need someone who specializes in content marketing? Do I need someone who specializes in demand generation? Do I need someone who specializes in brand? Is it someone who focuses on product marketing or lifecycle marketing or email marketing? And this is where you get into what specific skills do you need in order to reach your goals or grow your business? But if you're not able to be strategic about marketing, then what I would recommend is I would say, start with, where are you today and where do you want to go? And let's talk to some marketers who have done exactly that and discuss like, well, how did you actually go about that? Rob Walling has a really great framework for bootstrap founders on what marketing channels to invest in based on the size, stage, or LTV, ACV, average contract value, lifetime value that you have in your business and based on your product itself. And I actually think that's a really good way to think about, too, like how you think about hiring for marketing. So, for example, if you know that paid acquisition is going to be a huge opportunity for you, you'll probably want to invest in someone who is more of a demand generation marketer. So they understand how to capture demand and also they understand how to create demand. With demand gen, though, I find you usually get one or the other with marketing. Like you get either someone who really understands demand capture, but they don't understand demand creation, or you get someone who's like all demand creation, but maybe they're not as strong on the demand capture side. This is kind of where, like, you know, again, the more that you understand what are the skills that you actually need, that's going to kind of determine the type of marketer that you bring on. If you need someone, if you know SEO and content marketing are a huge opportunity, you're going to want to hire a content marketing or SEO person. Like that's going to, that sounds so obvious, but those skills match with where you're at and what you need. And also, therefore, you can find people who specialize in those things. So specialists, if again, you're able to be strategic, but if you're not necessarily able to be strategic, you might be looking at a generalist or you might be looking, meaning like someone who can kind of do it all. Or you might be looking more at, you know, based on specifically what channel support you need, then you can start there. When I'm thinking about hiring for marketing, I am thinking about channels, but I'm also just thinking about where do I need this business to be able to go in the next 1 to 2 years? And what kind of person do I think is going to be able to get us there and then sustain us once we get there? And so I'm looking potentially at a few key hires or one hire that has a very specific skill set and experience set that I'm looking for. The framework that I like to give folks, and I don't even know if this is, I'm pretty sure this is just something that I've just kind of built over time. I'm sure it's based or rooted in something else though, but it's what skills do you need? What experience do you need? And then what are the right characteristics of that person? So skills, that's the easiest place to start. If you know content marketing is where you need to go, hire a content marketer and probably some writers. Like that's probably like the easiest thing I think to start with, next to SEO maybe. But then you get to experience. And this is where I would say this might be a little harder for technical founders because they might not be familiar with like, well, what are the experiences that someone can have that would create a meaningful or valuable like working relationship with a marketer? But experience specifically is, did that person work in a B2B PLG SaaS company before? Have they taken previous companies from your stage of growth to the next stage of growth? Like, have they done this before? Or have they done something similar enough to what I'm trying to do? And this is where experiences can range quite a lot. But ideally, we're looking for someone who is as close as possible to the experience that you're about to go on. So for example, if you're at 50K in MRR and you're trying to get to 5 or 10 million in ARR, you probably want to hire someone who's done that before. There's also things like what is the context that you're in that would lend itself well to a great experience, such as, you know, maybe you have a very horizontal product. Maybe you should think about hiring someone who's got horizontal product experience. So that's the type of experiences that we're looking for.
And do you find that, is it easy to find that by looking through resumes, your applicants, once you post a job?
No.
Or are those things that you need to draw out in an interview?
You absolutely have to draw out an interview. I mean, for context for listeners, Kim and I have been looking at hundreds of resumes for a head of marketing role for one of our clients. And there are certainly some that we can very quickly weed out. Like we're seeing resumes from like, you know, I was the head of global communications for this like ginormous, huge enterprise company. And we're hiring for a bootstrapped company that's like small. This is gonna be the first marketer ever. So like those are the resumes we're like, okay, no, this is not like, we're pretty sure that person didn't mean to apply to this role because it's not applicable. Like this, you know, global VP of comms is probably not going to be head of marketing at this small bootstrap company. But there are a lot of very qualified looking folks. But just by looking at their resume, like you're just not going to know. Like you have to actually have a conversation. And there are a lot of people out there. But like what we would be looking for, though, would be, Have they either, you know, led marketing functions or based, like if we're looking for specific skill sets, have they done that role before in companies similar to ours or at least at similar stages?
So it's important to make sure that is, you know, you sort of have that hashed out. So it sounds like in some ways you can maybe do some searches off the resumes or look at the company and say, oh yeah, all those companies are too big, and you can start weeding people out. And then having that list in front of you when you're interviewing people to make sure it's like, okay, I am questioning this person to make sure that they have experiences with like these types of either industries or price points or, right? So totally. It sounds like it's just important to make sure that you kind of know what that is going in,
mm-hmm.
so that it helps you, like you've got your requirements.
Right, exactly. And then the last thing, it's going to be characteristics. So there's skills, experiences, and characteristics. And characteristics, I mean, this is, some people will say culture, but I find culture, like, is this person a culture fit? I find culture, well, one, I think it's rare for a bootstrap founder with a small team or no team to really truly understand what their culture actually is. Culture is something that is discovered and unearthed. I don't think it's something that you predefine and then try to like force onto your team. I think it's I think it's really more, I think it's the inverse model where culture is discovered over time and through people and not necessarily like, I'm going to decide what the culture is. Now I'm going to push it down to others. At least that's just not what I've seen historically work well. So I would say chances are you probably don't actually know what your culture is yet, especially if you have a small team or no team. Culture to me comes up in all the sticky, hard moments when like you disagree on things or when customers come to you with very real criticism and feedback. And like, how do you handle that? And how do you handle like working with each other, especially when you disagree? And I find if you've got a team of freelancers, that might not like those opportunities don't really come up. So you might not really know like, what is your culture really? So that's why I say this to me is not about culture as much. I think you'll discover if that person is a culture fit over time by working with them. But to me, it's like, do they have the right characteristics? So for example, I love meeting a demand gen person who is like, and I can just tell by the way that they're talking about their work that they love the numbers and that they actually thrive in understanding performance of various activities. And also, I can tell that someone is going to be a great demand gen person because it's not just that they're questioning everything, but they have like this constant critical eye almost of what it is that they're executing and launching or promoting or whatever it is. And they're extremely iterative, I find. Like they're like, okay, we did this V1, now it's time for V1.2. And like, I just can tell like, okay, like this is the right type of person for this job. But similarly,
does that mean like their characteristics would be analytical, data informed? Is that what you mean?
Yes, but also there's the other spectrum to this too, which is like, do you like them? Like,
right.
Do you think that you could talk to them every day or every other day or like whatever it is? And do you feel like they, like you can work with them? Like, and everyone's going to probably have a list of like, yeah, you know, I want this person to be easy to work with and yada, yada, yada. Like there's like that standard list that I'm sure ChatGPT could just like spit out to you of like what to look for in a person. But there also are very real, like, no, like you should really be thinking about the characteristics in this particular scenario, but it might be kind of hard to identify exactly what that is until you talk to someone. So for example, this person might be perfectly qualified, but they're maybe like the way that they communicate is like they're not the best communicator, even though they've got the right skills and the right experience. But every time you talk to them, they maybe talk in a circle or they don't actually get to the brass tacks of what actually needs to happen. They might not be very clear or direct, and that might be very important to you. And so you'd probably pass on that candidate because they're just going to drive you nuts, like by working with them. That's one example. But maybe you are not that way. Maybe actually you thrive in environments where like you need to verbally process things, and you don't mind someone maybe who speaks in circles because they do good work. So like that's the kind of thing that like you have to think about as you're going through this process. And again, you're really not going to know until you talk to people and you kind of realize like, oh, like this is who I think I really need. And also maybe what you're willing to kind of turn a blind eye to, like it doesn't bother you, or you're like, no, yeah, like I like this person and anything else is fine. Like that's perfectly normal. But characteristics I think are really important. And it's something that I think maybe a lot of founders don't think about. So what we typically find though is technical founders especially, they tend to underhire. And I think
what does that mean?
Underhire meaning like they're hiring for a role, but they end up hiring someone who is not the right fit because they're too junior or they don't have enough experience or the right skills. So they underhire. So it's almost, and again, it's just because if you don't know what you're looking for, and if you don't know what good or great looks like, this gets really difficult, obviously. But this is why I recommend, even if you don't think you're about to hire, go and talk to great marketers and talk about them and like get a perspective of how they talk about their work and also how they present themselves in general, because that will give you like a sense. It'll give you like a good, strong litmus test.
Yeah. And get a sense for their day to day.
Right.
As like you talked in the beginning, when you're looking at all those kind of flashy marketers that are promoting themselves, you're not necessarily seeing the weeds Right. And you need to make sure someone can come in and be in the weeds and do that work well.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think, obviously, like, you know, you're busy as a founder. You're busy. You have a lot of things to do. But if hiring is something that like you're going to embark on, like, you can feel in the next 1 to 2 years, you're probably going to be hiring either a head of marketing or maybe a part-time marketer or someone. It would be well worth your time to actually go and talk to experts, go and talk to people who are masters of their craft, but maybe not as visible. And especially, I think, I also recommend, like, if you have other founder friends who have more established teams, offer if you can chat with their marketer, not to hire, like, to poach them or anything, but like to, I just need to understand, like, what does this person sound like so I can recognize what great looks like.
That's great advice. And what I'm hearing too is, like, this should all be down on paper, right? And I think, and we've seen, you know, if you know you have to hire, it's easy to start talking to people before. So what I love about this framework is it's forcing you to think through these things and whoever else in your business that you need to pull in and really hash through. And some of this, it's not necessarily black and white. It's not always just a checkbox or not, but at least you sort of have that one pager of here are the skills, here's the experience, here's the characteristic, this is what this looks like. And then as you're talking to people, you can draw this out by having that background of, okay. And then, of course, there's going to be some give and take, right? Of this person checks almost all the boxes, but we're okay without this exact experience because we think this person can cover that with other things.
Yeah, totally. Something that I think is interesting, though, is, of course, this can totally fall apart. And where it falls apart is when expectations just don't meet the reality of the situation. So, for example, you might say, I want all the skills. I want someone to come in and do content, SEO, paid, product marketing, positioning and messaging, and be amazing at all of them. And you will talk to marketers who are generalists and who can do it all. It's funny because even, like, when I think about my own experience, I would say, like, if I were thinking about my marketing experience now, I'd say definitely generalist. But my experience level, I wouldn't go in as an individual contributor. I'd probably go in as, like, a CMO at this level or VP of marketing. Like, if I were to go back in-house and, like, do that thing. Mm-hmm. But I have gaps that I'm very aware of. Like, I know that technical SEO is not necessarily my thing, but I understand SEO very well. But I'm not like Jess Joyce. I'm not going to be able to, like, analyze your website and find, like, all the bits and bobs to go and turn. Like, that's not where I'm at in my career. And also just in my general expertise level. I am not a brand marketer. I came up in the demand gen world, which was all about, at that time, capture. Like, we're capturing demand that has already been created, let alone brand that you've created. And so brand marketing to me is still, it's like, it's interesting because I'm like, oh, this is like a gap I should learn at some point and, like, really figure out how to close. But even, like, the greatest marketers have gaps. Like, there are plenty of marketers I know, for example, who, like, they're excellent at marketing, but they don't, like, they're not privy or understanding of growth. Like, growth to them is actually very different. And it is very different. It's a completely different role, different function. But as a founder, you may have, like, you know, you want this person to check all these boxes, but eventually you'll meet reality, which is you're going to meet some incredible people, but they're not going to be able to perfectly check every single one of those boxes. And so that's kind of where you have to adjust your expectations of what is actually out there in the real world that is realistically attracted to the opportunity that you're providing. And I think that's the other thing too, is one thing I think that bootstrap companies versus, like, let's say VC funded companies may be challenged with is certain types of marketers are attracted to VC funded opportunities because they're fast growing. They're probably on the younger side and they have more energy to burn. It's funny because, like, I'm what, 35 now, and I couldn't imagine working for a VC funded company at my age. And I don't feel old at all, but I'm definitely like, couldn't do it again. When I was in my 20s, fine, but, like, not today. But VC funded, that requires a certain, like, it attracts a certain type of marketer, and right. Bootstrapped attracts a different type of marketer and a different type of person in general. And I think that is already like a dichotomy that you have to acknowledge and be very cognizant of, and therefore have your expectations set. And that's not to say that you can't get a great marketer. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm just saying there's just a certain vibe, literal vibe shift that happens when you go from like bootstrap to VC funded, and that attracts right. different types of people.
And to think about that match. So in the experience match, if you're talking to people that only have experience in VC backed companies, maybe that isn't the right fit. Or you're really going to have to probe to find out, is this person ready to come back to a different scenario where, you know, maybe in the VC company, they had to, you know, 200% growth every year.
Yeah.
With a ginormous budget.
More, 1,000%, 10x.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's funny. It's funny too, because we had this conversation recently with one of our clients, and it was cute, but it was also funny at the same time, because there was a marketer that we were interviewing, and I don't know if you remember this one, but they were like, oh yeah, I'm actually excited to work for a bootstrap company because it won't be as intense. And the founder of a bootstrap company, his, you know, their reaction was like, oh no, does that mean that they're not going to work as hard? And I had to explain to them, and I was like, oh no, 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 that's not what this person is saying. They're saying that they've been working 80 hours a week for the past 2 to 3 years, and they're dying, like literally burning out.
Right. They're ready to work 50 hours a week.
Right. But not 80 anymore. That's what they're saying. And so the founder was like, oh, okay. But if you've never worked for a VC funded company, like, it's just impossible to explain what that feels like. It's chaos. It's crazy. And that works for a lot of people, especially if you're in your 20s, because you just have the energy, I swear. But also, like, some people love it, and they like, that's where they want to be at. And 20% year over year growth is like just not exciting to them. And that's what a lot of bootstrap companies experience. It's like, it's either 20% to 200% at the max. I find it's rare. It's very rare, in my experience, at least, for a bootstrap company to do 2 to 3x consistently year over year without just like incredible product market fit. Like everything is just firing on all cylinders. We did actually experience this in the company that we exited with, but it is rare. It's rare to come by. So usually what we see in a bootstrap company is it's at the low end, 20% year over year, or it's at the high end, like 100 to 200%. 2x, 2 to 3x growth is typically what we see. But VC is like 8 to 10x and more. Like, you need to go from 1 million to 10 million in a year, which is bonkers. Like, it's just bonkers. But that attracts a certain type of person. And vice versa, the opposite is true as well. Bootstrapped also attracts a different type of person. You find a lot of marketers go into VC, burnout, and they're like, there's got to be another way. And then they go to bootstrapped. But that might be a little bit later in their career. It also just might be, it could be also earlier, it just depends. And then sometimes people go corporate and they never look back. And they're like, I don't want the VC life, but I'll take that Series E life. And they go super enterprise SaaS or whatever, which is a whole other way to live and just be. And so I think like the framework is definitely the framework, but we also have to have realistic expectations about just like what type of opportunity are we providing to people, and what should we be expecting in return, and what should we expect to see. And again, that's not to say like you're not going to attract someone great. Like, there are great people in all of these scenarios, but it is very like, you do have to be cognizant of the fact that like, you might not be able to hire Lenny Ratajkowski. You know what I mean? Like, you might not be able to hire Anthony Perry, like, full-time in your organization if you're a bootstrap company on the smaller side. So you have to think about, like, okay, well, what's adjacent to that or similar to that that I can
bring on? Set your bar.
Yeah, you got to set your bar. But I will say, don't set your bar too low. Because like I said, what I typically see is under-hiring, actually, when maybe we could be spending a little bit more to get a much better candidate overall, like, or a much better hire overall.
Yeah. And I think being well set on what you're looking for helps in those scenarios, because when you're talking with people, you're clearly kind of explaining what that role is. To your point, oftentimes it's not just a generalist. You're maybe focusing specifically in certain areas. That's going to attract people you know, that are good at those things, and you'll get quality candidates.
Something too that I wish more founders would think about, especially bootstrapped. A VC, I think, is actually already doing this. But in general, I think like on the engineering side, everyone's pretty open to not only remote, but overseas. Tons of very highly qualified and talented overseas talent in countries like that you just wouldn't expect, like Ukraine, like Poland. Also, Latin America is becoming really popular for technical like overseas talent. But the same is actually true for marketing. You can get an incredible marketer that you just wouldn't be able to get in the US, because love the US, love America, obviously, for what it is. I mean, today is going to be weird. Think what is it, tariff day?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't checked the stocks and I don't want to. I'm as patriotic as I possibly can be, I guess, publicly speaking. But when it comes to hiring, it's extremely competitive for marketing. Like, we're talking minimum 100K salary. Now, can you find contractors and freelancers for much less than that? Absolutely, of course. Even I think certain agencies would be a better fit in certain scenarios. But when I think about the talent that you can get overseas for the same, if not less, it's pretty dang competitive, I will say. Like, competitive in that, like, you can get an incredible person in Europe and they'd be more like 75K, or you might still see 100K. But the talent that we're looking at now, I mean, 160 minimum, I think, is what we're seeing salaries for, like, a head of marketing. That's minimum.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there might be some trade-offs, but we could maybe find someone for the 140 mark. But it'll, like, yeah, like, it's expensive. And there are certainly a lot of opportunities out there that would snatch those folks up in a heartbeat. So it's just, like, thinking about what is the actual role. Now, head of marketing is a role, but there's tons of other roles, obviously. Like, there's head of content or content marketing manager or director of marketing. Like, all of those have different connotations and contexts and different salary ranges that you'd expect. But it's crazy over here. So being open to overseas is something that I recommend a lot of founders, actually, especially if they're already remote. And this is not like a super customer facing role.
Right. You're okay. You can work with different time zones.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And have a good async company, you know, feel.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you've got like a good remote work culture in a way.
Yeah.
What else did we not cover? What are we missing? What are the questions that people might have come up with?
So how do you know when you should start hiring?
Yeah.
And maybe specifically for a full-time person, because, you know, I think using freelancers, agencies, that's going to be very common for a while.
Yeah. That's
what
a
are the
great
signals?
Question. So when I'm looking at a business, if they're at the million mark in ARR, usually my first question is like, okay, how is marketing structured? Mm-hmm. The other way that I think about this is, if we're bootstrapped, I'm assuming we're profitable. And like, our whole goal is to be profitable, which is great. We love a profitable company. I think what I'd be looking at would be, what is like the magical rule of 40, which is profit margin plus growth rate. So if you think about like your finances, what was the profit margin that you took and what was your growth rate from the last year? Or like, yeah, compared to last year. And if it's more than 40, we're probably not spending enough on marketing. And if it's less than 40, we're probably spending too much on marketing and we're not taking enough profit. The safe budget number that we typically look at is when we're thinking about like super growth, like we want to like really invest in growth, then it's probably 20 to 30% of our revenue. But if we want to be more conservative growth, it's probably like 10 to 15% of our revenue. That's how we think about budget. Now, all that to say, ultimately, you have to be able to afford to hire the person. But what I look at also is how much of the CEO's time or the founder's time are they spending managing marketing when that's actually not their zone of genius and they need to be doing other things. Now, someone like Rand, marketing and product are his zones of genius. He needs to, like, that's where he needs to go and be. So if I were Rand's boss, for example, I would never pull him off of marketing. Like, he and Amanda need to work together to do cool stuff. That's just right. What has to happen. Because Rand is an excellent, very talented marketer. There are some founders, though, where marketing is just not their zone of genius. And that's okay. in fact, like, I would expect you to have areas where it's like you're going to have gaps, just like everyone's going to have gaps. And also those gaps don't fulfill you. Like, it's not exciting for you to go and learn this. So for what I think about is, I think, like, is this founder happy doing this? Because that could mean, like, maybe they could hire an agency or someone who's maybe more junior that they can manage or, like, work with. Otherwise, if this is not their zone of genius, it does not make them happy. They don't enjoy doing this work. And the business maybe is actively suffering because they're still holding on to it or still managing it themselves. Then we think about, okay, do we need a more strategic leader? Or do we need someone who's more an individual contributor and more focusing on execution? And this is another spectrum that we have to think about, which is you can be on the more strategic side. Strategic leaders tend to not be necessarily, the best executors. But then again, that's not why you would hire them anyway. You'd hire them to lead, to manage, to inspire, and hopefully to never fire. But, like, they're responsible for building, managing the team, and also driving the business towards an ultimate goal. Or you're hiring someone on the execution spectrum, and that is really someone who, like, they're an expert in this thing, but they may not be necessarily a strategic leader. So they're going to need strategic guidance. So that's a little bit of, like, who or what type of person, and a little bit also of when. But that's, yeah, like, that's what I look for. I look for, like, what's the revenue? What, like, are we at that rule of 40 or not? Do we have the budget to hire someone? And is this the zone of genius of the CEO/founder?
Yeah, those are good data points and good signals. And then what about, so then if you gave that, what is it, about 20% budget for, like, a salary? Is that the number, or the low end was 15%?
That was more total, that was more total marketing budget. And then salary ideally would be drawn from within that.
Oh, right. So that's your total loaded.
Yes, total loaded. Yeah.
And then are you then looking at, okay, what should growth or return be from, you know, you're now investing in marketing. Is there anything that you're looking at?
So this is where, because it's different for bootstrap versus VC. I mean, VC, they're always looking for 10x.
Right. And money's getting pumped into the marketing department.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah. But I think for bootstrapped, I mean, even with pumping up marketing, unless the rest of your business is well oiled, your return on investment, I mean, obviously you want to see a positive ROI. That goes without saying.
Right.
But Jason Lemkin of Saster would argue that even a net return is actually still, like, net zero is actually still better, because in theory, you've got more customers. Like, you have grown, but maybe just not, like, taken on profit. So netting out still might actually be okay in certain scenarios. But with bootstrapped, I mean, obviously you want to see a positive ROI. There is no real, like, oh yeah, if you hire a head of marketing, you're going to see X lift. Like, I don't know that that exists.
And if it did, then there would be an easy formula everyone would follow.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know that that exists. But what I do know is, you'd be looking for signals in other areas of the business. Things are running easier. They're running smoother. Maybe you're sleeping better at night. You're not as stressed. Like, those are, like, some of the more qualitative things. And then, yeah, I mean, ideally you would see a bump in growth rate. But sometimes growth is achieved by, like, operational efficiency and literally just hiring. And just by taking that thing off of your plate, that person can really handle it all and more. And they're able to do more than you. So we would expect to see some type of lift, either in growth or profit or both. But the caveat here, though, is that, because I think that there's also this preconceived notion that just hiring marketing is going to fix all the problems. And I can assure you it is not, if you don't have a super solid product strategy, if you don't have a super solid retention strategy, activation, expansion. Like, if none of those things exist, you just hiring a marketing person and hoping that that's going to, like, you know, wave a magic wand and fix all the problems, it's not going to happen. Because all the other things are not firing on all the other cylinders. Like, if you think about your business as an engine, you've hired a marketing person. Great. You've now fired one cylinder. You now need the other seven cylinders to fire for you to have a V8. Like, that's how we, like, think about it. But a lot of founders forget that marketing is just one cylinder out of many. And yes, you can hire, and yes, you'll see some impact and some momentum there. But if the other things aren't working, then it's not going to do what you think it's going to do.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder. It needs to be part of your overall strategy and just not a Band-Aid.
Yeah. This also reminds me of a tweet that I saw back when we were on Twitter. This reminds me of a tweet that I saw from Gia Loudy. She runs Forget the Funnel. Yeah. And Gia is a great friend of mine. But I remember she tweeted once and she was like, did it hurt when you hired, you know, when you hired this like junior marketer and you were expecting a CMO? And I mean, obviously I retweeted because I was like, lol, this is so common. But this is what we call under hiring with the context of you needed a strategic leader. And you probably needed both. You probably needed an individual contributor and a strategic leader. But hiring someone and then expecting them to fill this very real, clear gap, it's not going to work. You're going to be disappointed every time. That person's going to be disappointed and stressed out. And it's not going to feel good. And you're not going to reach whatever goal you're hoping to hit. But it's very, very common. And I think also a lot of founders, again, if you've never worked with a strategic leader, or the opposite, if you've only ever worked with strategic leaders and you've never worked with individual contributors or like experts in their specific marketing practice, you just don't know what it looks like. You don't know that there are differences. And like, when would you hire one versus the other? So it's like,
right. Which that skills part of the framework becomes really important. Like, nail that down. You might actually need strategy and execution. And right. Maybe it's a full-time who's more strategic with freelancer or part-time that are doing some of the individual contributor stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and like for like a CMO, like the skills aren't going to be SEO and Google Ads. It's going to be people management and hiring and leadership and goal setting and budgeting and planning and visioning. Like, it's going to be those things. It's not going to be like you're not going to hire a CMO and then be like, okay, now do SEO keyword research. There are right. certainly scenarios where maybe that person would literally roll up their sleeves and do those things, but that would not be the expectation. That would be the gift. That would be a surprise. Like, oh, right. Wow, they can do that. That's so cool. Thank you so much. But making it very clear, like, they're not here to do that. This also reminds me of another story. When I joined the board of Moz, so when Rand stepped down and he tapped me to take his seat as a real acting board member, I think you'd be surprised how many people ask me if I was just a board watcher. And I was like, no. I was an actual acting board member. I had to sign paperwork at midnight, like to, you know, sell Moz to J2 Global or whatever it was. But yeah, so like when I joined the board, I'll never forget Michelle, one of the board members, was like, your job is, as a board member, you are not here to do. You're here to ask who and where and why. And I remember thinking, oh, this is like the top of the top. Like, this is, you don't get higher than board member. And it was fascinating to me because, you know, she knew that I was an operator, and also like, I've got experience being an individual contributor, but I also have leadership experience. And so she's like, you know, remember, you're not here to execute for anybody. You're here to ask who is going to do this job. And right. And what is the right job? And I just remember being such a mindset shift for me. And but I think it's very similar with any chief or executive level or strategic level role that you're hiring. That person probably isn't going to be the, you know, doing. They're probably going to be the leading and the visioning and the blah blah blah. So yeah.
And to Gia's tweet, it's what, and we have seen this where people might have on their resume, head of marketing, VP of marketing. Mm-hmm. But when you dig in, they're actually a lower junior level person that went into a company and they got given that title.
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh yeah, you're going to be our VP of marketing. And they're more of the junior level executor and don't have all the experience of the strategy, developing things and planning, and then kind of passing things on. So it's something to be careful for too, right? When you're looking at people's experience.
Yeah. This I would say is, I think, a really unfortunate side effect of not understanding what executive level positions mean. But in truth, like, it's such a mess now. Like, you just really can't tell. But it does, it makes me really feel for that person, because they might have carried that title, but then they go and they interview at other places. And this is why networking and like just connecting with other, like if you're a CMO or a VP or a head of marketing or director, like whatever your title or role is, go and connect with other people with your title and role and like get a sense for like, not like a, I don't want to say like, you don't want to like stack yourself, like you don't want to measure yourself up against anyone. I just don't believe in the comparison game, but I do think it's important to understand what are your gaps? Like what are some things that maybe you're not doing or not thinking about? There's like, Kim and I talk also a lot about posturing. Like when you're hiring this marketer, how do they posture based on what you're actually looking to hire for? So a lot of people are nervous interviewers, but you can be nervous and still posture as someone who is confident. Like, you know your shit, you know you like what you're doing. But then there are a lot of people who, yeah, like when you dig deeper, there's just really not much there. And it's really tough on the other side of the fence because it's hard to know, like, is that person just not qualified or do they not, you know, you want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. You know, they're probably not lying to us, but they just don't have they either don't have the words to communicate like what value they drove, which is, you know, it's a whole other challenge because that might mean like maybe they don't do as good of a job in one-to-ones or what have you. But yeah, it's a slippery slope. But I do think asking those probing questions and like digging deeper in interviews and like really understanding and unpacking like what was your role and comparing it and contrasting it to what you've maybe heard from other VPs of marketing, I do think that matters a lot. But sometimes it does happen and it's unfortunate. And you just like, you know, cross your fingers and hope and pray that like that person's going to be taken care of. But yeah, that it we've had that happen a few times.
Yes.
Kim's like, no comment on that. And but funnily enough, I don't think I've ever seen the flip side of that where. Oh, actually, no, maybe we have where like the resume really didn't tell the whole story. And then we talked to them and actually like we're like, whoa, your resume made us think this, but actually you're this. And in like in a good way, like in a, oh, my gosh, we didn't know that that's who you were from like on paper. But that's pretty common, I think.
Right. And yeah, it's what makes hiring time consuming.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And what makes it difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I feel like we like solved hiring.
That's it.
We did it.
We're solved done. It. Go hire your first marketing hire.
And be as unafraid as possible. No, but I do hope that this gives perspective. We do have another episode. We're going to dig more into like the process of hiring, mostly because it's just so fresh in our minds. But there are new places to post now and new places to promote jobs. And also like thinking about like your job description and like what do you really need this role to do? Like all of those are things we're going to unpack in a future episode. So I do hope that this is at least a good primer. And also, again, like the framework that you want to use when you're thinking about hiring, it's going to be skills, experience, and characteristics. And you can add whatever else you want to that. But that's my baseline for how I'm thinking about a role in general.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to start and also reveals the need to have discussions and think through it before you put up a job post. You know, it's of course not going to be easy, but those are three good checkboxes to make sure that you're talking through with whoever you need to talk to and in the company or whether it's just you, you know, when you start looking or thinking about hiring.
Totally. All right. Well, cool. Well, thanks, Kim.
Yeah. Thanks, Asia. We'll talk soon.